Morning scripture is taken from Proverbs chapter 2. Comes out of the message. So, join the company of good men and women. Keep your feet on tried and true paths. It's the men who walk straight who will settle this land, the women with integrity who will last here. The corrupt will lose their lives, the dishonest will be gone for good. Amen. Good morning. Mr. Quinn has a program this morning, so here he is.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. No, not like last time. I always want to tease you. Okay. I'm going to read this first part fast because I tried to pace this so we could get done in time, but there's no way we're going to get done in time, but okay. This week's chapel programs are related to safe living and healthy lives. Now, living safe and healthy lives, let me just say it like that. I want to remind you that any of you can share with us during chapel, whether it's a story, a song, an idea, a silly skit, or just good energy. Please let me or Ms. Mitchell know if you're interested, and we'll try to set you up with a day. Thursday's chapel will be presented by Janine Brown and Montana Dukes. Friday's chapel is headed by Kyle Holcomb, and I don't know what they'll be doing exactly, but it's their show. And if you want to help them out, talk to them about it. I want to start with some information that I took from FCD's website. FCD is a nonprofit substance abuse prevention organization. They say that when teenagers take drugs, it's not necessarily because they want to do drugs or introduce a toxin into their system. It's because they want to stop feeling bored, angry, hurt, worried, harassed, afraid, inadequate, ostracized, lonely, or anxious. There's nothing wrong with wanting to relax, seek a thrill, take a risk, escape reality. Just talk to Mr. Stimson and Mr. Swofford about the caving and the rock climbing and Mr. Wofford about the thrill he gets out of losing kids in the woods every weekend. Talk to the athletes about the high they get on that court. Good job, fellas. You know, and you guys know how it feels. You lose it and you go and it's just like pure fun energy living. So they say that getting high isn't the problem. How you do it is. They've been to Webb a couple of times in the past, and some of you seniors may remember participating in the survey they conducted here about 5 or 6 years ago. You may have been in middle school then. According to the national survey that this was part of, about 25 of you sophomores sitting out there right now have used alcohol in the past year. About 4 of you eighth graders, about 11 of you sophomores, about 18 of you juniors, and about 20 of you seniors have smoked dope in the past year. And about 6 of you seniors have taken prescription drugs, you know, without really being sick. Remember, this is based on a national survey and not the one conducted here at Webb. Only you guys know for sure whether or not these results apply to your class. But I'm here to talk to you about my own high school days. I presented most of the following back in 2003, and part of my reason was that some of my high school classmates had kids that started attending Webb, and I was reminded of this Bible verse. It's Numbers 32:23. But if you do not do so, then take note. You have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Now, of course, Moses was talking about land wars and such, but, you know, it's pretty common to take scriptures out of context to get them to serve your own purpose, which is usually some purpose other than what the gods intend. So anyway, here's an edited version of a talk I gave a little over 5 years ago on December 3rd, 2003. I took out some of the details on the care team since it was brand new at the time, and I added some new stuff at the end. My son, Ian, sent me this email with this attachment with all these demotivational posters, and one of the demotivational posters described a working colleague as an individual who has an overinflated sense of self-worth and behaves ridiculously in front of others. And at that moment, I had a pinnacle enlightened second of self-realization, and I knew they were describing me. But the word that they really were describing, I can't say to you. So anyway, if this thing goes a little long, I'm sorry, and you can roll your eyes and hammer me at the faculty meeting in the morning. I'm really only speaking to very few of you, but I don't know who you are. So I have to take you all with me if you want to go. I hope I don't make the rest of you uncomfortable. Imagine you're taking a little walk with me. We're walking out behind the chapel, out around back and up the hill, past the new gym, past the soccer field, right through the pine thicket where there's a clutter of beer cans hidden by a tree. Right by the stinking sinkhole dump that not many see and care about. Back through the field past the ganja plants that are no longer managed by their expelled owner. We go through the woods to the creek, and we take a seat on a log here by the creek. In the woods, just you and me. This is where we can tell secrets if we choose to, and this is where I share my thoughts with you. Oh, I don't like secrets, though. They don't make friends. And what I'm about to say is really no secret. I just believe that plain and simple truth and honest truth is a powerful thing. And if you don't want to hear it, it's fine with me. Just sit there quiet and daydream. I'm pretty nervous, though. Not nervous like the first time. It's mainly for dramatic effect this time. But anyway, I have the same feeling I get when I hear somebody say, "Hey, my daddy knew you in high school." It scares me to death. My past haunts me, and there's nothing I can do about it now. It's impossible to retract regrettable decisions, but it is possible to overcome them, or at least pretend that you do. Everything I'm about to say is true, except the names of my friends. I changed them. It's a shame when you can't tell people, you know, who your friends are. I'm not ashamed of my friends. I'm just ashamed of myself. When I was in high school, we gathered in an auditorium one afternoon to watch movies. State troopers had come to show us horrible images of death. Real people and real death. Twisted, burned, and mangled cars with human flesh dangling from sharp edges. Washed out films of gaping wounds and screaming, crying people. It was safe driving week. This horror was somehow supposed to make us all drive safely. All I know is it gave me an eternally haunting image of a pretty blonde girl with round blue eyes. They were frightened eyes, and she was sucking her bloody lips down her throat because the steering wheel had smashed away her teeth when a drunk driver crashed into her head-on. And they were trying to extract her from the car, but she was trapped, and they couldn't get to her, and she couldn't breathe, and the cameraman did nothing but shoot the film, and she was smothering in her own blood, and she was beautiful, and I loved her for that moment, and maybe I still do. She gave her life for me, and she never knew it, but it didn't do me a damn bit of good. All we did was talk about how cool it was to see guts in the road. But I still remember that beautiful girl, and her dying image haunts me. I thought about creating a horrible image like this for you today, but I've heard students say that people need to be scared so they won't use drugs, and maybe someday I'll perform it. It'll be a lot of fun. But I really don't know how much good it'll do. If someone asked me when I started using drugs, I don't know if I could tell them. I remember making a conscious effort to cuss one day, though. I was known as a real churchy kind of kid at the time, and one day in the backyard football, during a backyard football game, I just decided to say, "Damn," like everybody else. And so when I got tackled, I said it, "Damn." And it was weird, and it shocked all my friends, and they didn't know what to do. I have been very good with my language since then. Shortly after that, we moved to another town. I was a freshman. That's when I remember stealing a cigarette from my parents and sneaking into the bathroom to smoke it. It was some kind of menthol, and it made me dizzy, and I puked. Pretty soon, I was sneaking a smoke fairly often, though. I don't know why I did this, but no one caught me or said anything about it. I kept on smoking for about 9 years, and I still don't know why I started. The next year, when we moved back to my old hometown and school, I felt a little out of place because people had changed. I saw some guys that I knew before in Boy Scouts, and they were always cutting up in class and having fun, and people seemed to like them, so I started trying to hang out with them. And they smoked cigarettes too, so it was all pretty good. I don't know why I started drinking, but I remember one of the first times. My friend Austin had an older brother who had a paper route. His brother hired us to help him erect these boxes for the newspapers one afternoon, and he paid us in beer. We were about 15. After that, he'd buy us beer whenever we wanted it. We all had jobs and could usually afford it. But my friend Austin drank the most every time. He nearly always got drunk when there was beer or liquor around. He always took things further than the rest of us. I remember leaving Austin on the sidewalk in front of his house one night. He passed out from drinking and taking downers after school down by the creek. We didn't wake him, and we were scared. We couldn't wake him. We shouldered him to his front yard and laid him down. We knocked on his front door, and we ran to the bushes. His mother came to the door and screamed, and they took him away to the hospital. At school, Austin told us that they pumped his stomach. He said it was kind of scary at first, but then kind of cool. He nearly died, and it didn't seem to faze him one bit. He still had to be the one to get the highest. At the time, I was working as a busboy, and I could drink at work after the restaurant closed. I pitched in on the beer like everybody else. I could walk home down the railroad tracks and sneak easily into bed, and no one ever asked me about my drinking, except once. It was the day we took a school trip to have our senior pictures made. My friends and I all got drunk and stoned. My friend Austin was the drunkest, of course, since he was also taking barbiturates. He staggered down the sidewalk as we watched from a distance. We were too scared to be caught in his company. We were giggling and thinking it was pretty funny. What's that crazy Austin going to do next? He fell into the glass doors of the pool hall and shattered them, and he was arrested. The next day, I was called into the principal's office and asked if I was the ones drinking. I said, yeah, but I didn't get drunk. He asked who else was drinking, and I told him I couldn't tell him that. I got suspended, but I really don't remember my parents being involved. I don't even think they knew about it at the time because I was 18 and a legal adult. No one ever asked me to see a counselor, and no one seemed to care. All I knew is that the principal and coaches just wanted to bust my ass. But I had gotten the best of them. I've been stoned at least every week in high school, sometimes every day, and they never knew it. Or maybe they did, and they just didn't give a crap. Oh, did I say stoned? I forgot to mention that I'd also started smoking dope on a regular basis. My friend Kevin had brothers returning from Vietnam. They had drug connections and would sell us the strongest pot whenever we could afford it. We all had jobs, and weed was pretty cheap. About $15 for an ounce, about $30 for a bag of buds. I spent my school days on weed and acid and other drugs, nights working and drinking beer, and weekends hanging around parties at the lake. All through high school and my first 2 years of college, I was stoned more days than not. My parents still don't know about it all. Now, I don't tell you these things because I'm proud of the way I live, but there's nothing I can do about that now. And who knows? My high school friends, they've got good story on me. They can say that stuff anytime they want. I was a stupid child making dangerous decisions and staying pretty lucky for the most part. If I wasn't lucky, I wouldn't be here with you today. I'd be dead. I have to stop for a moment because I see her trying to breathe. I see her bloody breath leave her beautiful body. I see the lonely terror in her round eyes, and she still haunts me. She reminds me of my friends. Let me tell you about my high school friends. My friend Kevin was the funniest. He played guitar and was always laughing, and he's done well. He's on his second marriage, but no real problems. He quit doing drugs long ago, although he might smoke a joint now and then. And he still drinks occasionally. My friend Harold has been in drug rehab twice, and he still struggles to stay clean, and he's divorced. My friend George was a literary wit, a near genius who could shoot down any teacher with a clever style that never got him into trouble. He was rumored to shoot heroin, but I never saw him do it. He had a nervous breakdown when he was 18 and had to be hospitalized. I haven't seen him in 20 years, and I hear he's working at a Waffle House. My friend Barry is a Vietnam veteran. He was busted for growing pot a while back and served 3 years in the federal penitentiary. He's a good person. He's just antisocial. He lives in a shack in the woods with his dogs. My friend Helen drove straight into a tree and died at the age of 18. They said it was an accident, but she was drunk or stoned and had just had a fight with her boyfriend, and it was a closed casket funeral. In 2003, my best friend Austin was in successful rehabilitation and gained custody of his daughter, but now she's under custody with her aunt, and he just received another DUI, and last time I talked with him last week, he was just wasted. My friend Frank died at the age of 45 of heart failure. I had nearly killed him 25 years earlier when I fell asleep at the wheel of my Volkswagen Bug during a night of drinking and smoking dope. I wrapped us both around a telephone pole 20 feet off the ground. Miraculously, I only dislocated my shoulder, but I cut Frank up pretty bad. I fell out of touch with Frank after that, but I heard he never stopped using narcotics and drinking. He left behind a wife and two little girls. I was asked to speak at his funeral, and when I stood in front of his mother and looked into her sad eyes, I couldn't think of anything to say. All Frank and I ever did was drive around and get stoned. Now he was gone, and I felt ashamed. Well, what about me? I thought I was having a great time for the most part, but the parts that aren't great are devastating. I have many embarrassing and dangerous moments and shameful stories that all relate to drug and alcohol use. I spent time in drunk tanks, and I nearly lost my mind, but I was lucky. I had frightening experiences, but I lived through them all. I started quitting things one by one. Cigarettes, then hallucinogens, then speed, then pot, and finally alcohol. Each time due to a close call with death or insanity. Well, except for cigarettes. I was just afraid of getting cancer since a lot of my relatives were dying from it. I met a wonderful woman and I fell in love. And finally, I'd laid it all down by the time my first son was born over 20 years ago. I'm an alcoholic and addictive lifestyles run in my family. My cousin's daughter died a couple of years ago at the age of 18. She was a young mother, and she was addicted to methamphetamine. It was so strange, that funeral. Very quiet, very sad, and the dad was just matter of fact. I never could understand that. Another close relative is in jail right now for his fourth DUI. He's been clean and sober over a year since he got busted, but justice moves slowly sometimes. I too am afraid to drink now, but I really would enjoy a glass of wine or a cold beer now and then. I'm afraid I couldn't stop at one or two drinks though, and it would be just like high school. I also thought, you know, if I don't drink and I don't do drugs, then my children won't have an excuse to use them. And I'd be better equipped to justify my position when I told them that I don't do it and I'm not going to tolerate it. I didn't want them to end up like me or my friend. But this assumption was shattered when I learned that my older son was drunk at Webb's party, the after-prom party, when he was a junior. It was sponsored by parents, by the way. He may have started drinking before that, though. Later on, when he was in college, he totaled his car during a drunken blackout, and then he quit drinking for a while. But now both my sons drink. They say they don't ever drive after drinking, though, and I don't condone it. I don't like it, and they know it. But they still do it. Drugs are sometimes stronger than a parent's love. And who am I to impose my fears and standards upon them now that they are adults capable of making their own decisions? What else can I do but love them? I'm proud of them for so many things, but I'm also really worried about them. Same as some of you guys. And this is what truly haunts me. Why did I start using alcohol and other drugs? Why did my son? Why do some of you? There are as many reasons people use drugs and don't do drugs as there are in this room right now. You know, sometimes I analyze my life, and I have my suspicions, but I still can't point to a single reason. But when I look back at it, I see that I could always get drugs and alcohol from people that I trusted and people I admired. My parents never gave me cigarettes, but that's where I first accessed them. My friends, their older siblings, and co-workers supplied whatever drugs or alcohol I needed until I was old enough to get out on myself and look for it. And what's the harm? I turned out okay, didn't I? Well, sort of. Just look at me. That assumption is one of my greatest fears, that I was one of the lucky ones. But my friends, relatives, and other dear ones were not so lucky. So who are the lucky ones? I think that the truly lucky ones are those folks that never use alcohol or drugs, they can enjoy life without them. I know Webb students who have died or been seriously injured in accidents involving drugs or alcohol. Some have been arrested for drug offenses, and yet they seem to ignore the amount of trouble and pain they have caused themselves, their family, and their friends and others. I'm so proud of each and every one of you who has chosen not to use alcohol and drugs, even if you've done them before. You should be very proud of yourselves as well. I'm still lucky, and I'm still staying straight so far. It may be weird to think that someone can attend Bonnaroo or Burning Man absolutely straight and have a great time without being stoned on drugs or alcohol, but I must admit that sometimes the music and the creative energy itself actually gives me a high. On good jams, I can dance myself into a silly trance that takes me into a momentary bliss. But really, I'd like to drink a glass of red wine at the end of the evening or enjoy a cold beer on a hot day, but I can't. My neurons and my body chemistry make it too risky for me. And I'm not drug-free. I still got to have my caffeine. And I still take my vitamins. And I'll probably be on antidepressants the rest of my life. And that's just fine. And what does this repenting have to do with you? I don't know, really, except I honestly don't know how else to make something good come from it all. I don't know that it will, but I simply don't know what else to do. That round-eyed girl that haunts me now also haunted me all through high school, but she still didn't keep me from wrapping my car around a telephone pole. My personal intent with this thing is really simple. I just want you to take better care of yourselves and take better care of your friends than I did. I hope that you don't cause yourself pain or have to see your friends go through the pain I have seen mine go through because of their decision to use drugs and alcohol or to have unprotected sex. I know that some of you already have personal stories that are more horrifying than my own. And this is such a wicked paradox. The corrupted old ones telling the young ones to do better than they did. What a cop-out. Why didn't I do it right when I was your age? How can I hold you to a higher level of responsibility when I screwed up my own life? It's simply that I don't know what else to do. I'm just a teacher. I can't even keep my own kids from drinking and doing drugs. How can I help you and your friends? Well, I can listen to you. I didn't know of anyone who wanted to help me at your age, and believe it or not, the administration would rather help you than bust you. And you can talk to them. The care team can help you or your friend find someone who is trained to help you, and we can help you help your friends. You can always approach our counselor, Dr. Chapman, confidentially for help. Now, help is pretty energy intensive, but well worth it. Sometimes we try to make it too simple, though. Have you ever heard of any of these drug-free slogans? Just say no. I'm too good for drugs. Drug-free is the way to be. Don't choose the booze. If you choose the booze, you lose. This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? Drugs are not retarded. No, I just screwed that up. No wonder people are so confused. Drugs are retarded, so don't get started. And say not to pot. Well, I came up with my own slogan. I think this one's a little more realistic. Even if I live in or I go on a field trip to a country where the drinking age is 18, and even though I know a sip of champagne or glass of wine at dinner now and then probably won't damage me forever, and even though I can't watch TV or look at a magazine without getting bombarded by messages and images telling me how wonderful alcohol is, I know my brain is still developing, and I'm really not mature enough to make such a potentially hazardous choice, so I will try to not even think about drugs or alcohol until I am at least 21 years old. But that won't fit on a t-shirt. When I was a kid, Smokey the Bear had a slogan that said, "Only you can prevent forest fires." Only I could prevent forest fires. Only me. You know, that was a pretty heavy burden to put on a kid. But then I started thinking about how forest fires and drug and alcohol use have a lot in common. You know, a small fire can keep you warm and comfortable, just like a few drinks during a party with friends, you know, sort of make the conversation easier and hanging out with them seem more fun. Some people are careful around the fire and don't want to get burned, and some people are careless and take great risks. Some of you think the fire is out, but the embers still remain and can flare up anytime there's a strong wind. When the fire gets out of control, you may need a lot of help to put it out. You just can't do it yourself. So I thought about another slogan. Only you. Only you can make the decision to live drug and alcohol free. Only you will be there to make that decision when your friends offer you a bowl or a cup. There's nothing I can do to help you in those moments. So I made a bunch of these little fellas. I call them, "Oi, buddies!" So I made, to me, the O-Y stands for only you. But "Oi!" is also a sound of exasperation because I don't know what else to do. Anyway, the "Oi, buddies" don't have a mouth, so they can't tell you what to do. They can only remind you that you're the one in control. You're the only one in control of your life, and sometimes it's hard to keep that control. They're made of air-dried clay. They're fragile and hard to keep, just like a promise. And they must be handled with care. I was going to ask you to come up right now in front of the stage, in front of everybody, as a testament to your commitment to live drug-free in front of the world for the rest of your life. But I thought it might embarrass some of you, especially those 20 seniors. I'm kidding. Sort of. So, if you like, come up after chapel and get one, or stop by my classroom and pick one up later. If they run out before you get one, don't worry. I'll be glad to make more, but just for you, only you. That's all.